Hello and welcome to Hide and Speak with me, Matt Saxon. Today's guest is a Brit award-winning guitarist. He's been all over the world touring with bands such as Detroit Social Club, Symphonic Pictures and Catfish and the Bottlemen. We got together in a bird hide in Northumberland this October just gone. You'll hear that he's actually been birdwatching for a couple of years now, so I figured he'd be perfect for episode one of the podcast. So yeah, I do just want to say a quick thank you for everybody listening. We had a lot of fun recording this, so I really hope you enjoy it. Yeah, here it is. Episode one, Johnny Bond. So yeah, welcome to the podcast. I'm joined Hello. Here by Johnny Bond. How are you doing? Are you alright?
I'm good. Feeling a bit more at home in a hide after dipping my toe early last year into, I wouldn't say full-blown bird watching, but more enjoying a hide as a space to come and chill out. Got the keys to the Northumberland Wildlife Trust, and off your advice, I'm enjoying it as a good sort of wind-down space, enjoying the hides.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that you got the key and you've been going to that place. But we're not actually at that hide. We went bird watching sometime. Actually, it was about a year ago, you know. It was October last year when we first went bird watching together.
You're right, yeah.
Mad.
Wow. Literal fastest year of my life.
I think me too, yeah. Spent too much time with my head in a computer, unfortunately. But we'll not talk about that. When we first went bird watching, you were saying that you were quite new to it, so I'm assuming you've got a year's worth of bird watching behind you. You've probably been bird watching more than I have, actually. Totally honest, I've been a little bit poor with how many times I've been going out personally.
I mean, I've been, from when we last went out, like continuing that like embracement of the Northeast.
You know,
we're speaking about it, then that's not went away. It's not something that ever goes away, but it still feels. We're still in the pandemic, aren't we? It's still ongoing.
Yeah, it's definitely still happening.
And I've been utilising that with the most time I've been home in a long time to get out and see places I've known, places that I haven't known in the Northeast. This being one, a new spot for me. And all the minor bird knowledge I've acquired has came along with them trips.
I think I'm the same, yeah.
I'd have been on a couple of Twitches. I saw a mockingbird up in New Biggin.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Third ever in the UK.
Mockingbird.
A mockingbird. Right. It was spotted by a 4-year-old lass.
Really?
Yeah. So I think there's the house with its garden next door to a car mechanic's sort of like courtyard. Mm-hmm. This young lass had like pointed to her mum. She's like, What's that? And her mum took a picture and put it on Facebook. Someone identified, like, oh my God, is that still there?
Is it still? Yeah.
And it was just sat showing on their fence. So they obviously didn't want people in their garden. So the car mechanic had like a goodwill box out, you know, for people coming, because people obviously hightailing it up the country to come and see it. And it was showing really well when it went up. So I just sort of got a coffee and stood in this mechanic's courtyard. And they're not like the most striking bird to look at. Like if you saw it, you wouldn't go, right. Oh my God, that's, you know, they're hard like a bird of paradise sort of thing. But the other sort of big spot I saw was, I mentioned last time, the shrike up on Holy Island. Awesome behaviour from them, like really interesting character of a bird, but not the most striking of birds to look at.
Yeah.
I'm saying that again, there's probably people out there going like, they're fucking amazing, man. Like, because I don't have that knowledge, like something's got to pop. If it, like, I'm impressed by like starlings.
Most starlings,
common fucking bird in the country. Yeah.
Like iridescent kind of feathers, they're kind of like glisten in the sun, don't they?
Yeah. And
they're really beautiful.
When you go up to,
people think they're just super common birds, don't they?
But, when you go up to St. Mary's and they all sort of loaf on the car park there to get the warmth on the tarmac and you drive around and it looks amazing seeing like them all sort of glistening. I've developed this mad, weird affinity. I love seagulls. Like, I think seagulls are amazing. But baby seagulls, one of my favourite things to do at the minute is just, I've moved to Whitley now, so I'm living in Whitley Bay, so I go wandering with a coffee. I feel like that's everybody's new hobby since COVID hit.
Right,
walking with coffee. That habit hasn't left. The first thing I do when I wake up in the morning now is just go wandering along the seafront with a coffee. And the baby seagulls amaze and amuse me in equal measure. It's sad, isn't it? Because they just get abandoned by the parents. Then they just got to go and
fend for themselves.
Figure shit out. Which just involves the first few months just being wandering around with their heads recessed, their body just... and things. I just find them absolutely adorable. angry side came out the other day when I saw somebody in the lane trying to run one over. Intentionally, I think, what fucking mindset have you got to be into intentionally trying to run it over?
Yeah.
So I fucking jumped in my car and I was chasing them around the back lanes for about 10 minutes, thinking like, oh, you don't fucking like a deer.
Did you catch him?
I didn't, but I don't know what I would have done. But like, I was just like, I've got this parental like kind of
you're the big brother
sensation
over
these
birds,
like
yeah.
baby seagulls. I keep turning up in the back lane. And I'm like, stop it, man.
I was round at my mum's the other day. I just walked through the back garden to get into our house. A next door neighbour was sitting in a conservatory and she was just like, I don't know, watching telly or reading a book or something. And there was a bunch of pigeons in her garden. And when I like knocked on my mum's door, like I disturbed a bunch of pigeons. And the lady who in the conservatory came out and started like going for the pigeons and stuff and like giving them loads of shit and like, get the fuck away from me, garden, oh, that you vermin and all this. And I was thinking, I didn't say anything, but like, I wanted to just say, listen, man, pigeons are class. Like, they get such a bad rap. And then
I was
like,
looking at some of the more exotic versions of pigeons the other day. I didn't really realise some of the things that they're linked to. Every bird seems to have its own pretty unique and amazing sort of stat about it or something. You're going to have to point out what we have here. Is that a cormorant?
Well,
cormorant?
Why don't you just kind of give us a little rundown of where we are and like what you're seeing and just give the listeners a little bit of a vibe.
Say the first time in this hide. It's nice, isn't it?
We're actually in a pretty swanky hide.
Very, very pleasant.
It's nice and tidy. They're doing well. Keeping
right on the waterfront. They've got some nice twigs protruding from the water to have birds to come and land on, get a good view.
Yeah, some nice. We've got a tree in the middle of the pond, which is pretty cool. Is this a pond or a... It's a pond, isn't it?
I think this... It's known as one of the larger expanses of water in the UK. I don't know if this particular one is actually a couple of bits here.
Well, it is called Big Waters,
Big
after
water.
All. We're in Northumberland, just off the A1. This place called Big Waters, it's part of Northumberland Wildlife Trust.
It's not a million miles away. Looking this way from where we've been in the past, that bit in the centre is reminders of it. At that one, I love that there's always a heron there. I find herons really, really, really interesting. Again, I think it was like last time we were out saying it's just like watching a dinosaur.
Oh, yeah. They're one of my favourite birds.
There's one that's always in this sort of central rockery bit back there.
Where are you seeing this right now?
No, I'm saying when you know, over at the other place. There's always one that sits there. Mm-hmm. Is that a cormorant?
Cormorant, yeah. We've got... So do a quick look through the binoculars, see what we've got. Greylag geese, some cormorants... Coot, got swan with some cygnets. One, two. I'm only seeing two cygnets.
There's one stood on a tyre. Is it migration season?
No. Well, I think they're all heading south now. It's autumn now, isn't it? So they'll probably be heading south shortly. But yeah, that's a cormorant. Two cormorants on the middle island there. That's quite cool. There's tons of birds. There's like, there's hundreds that I'm looking at right now.
Last time out, it was raining, wasn't it? It was a bit.
Yeah, it was a bit quiet.
It did add some... I like going in the rain. Like you're saying, like I'm not a massive bird watcher. Not out of not being interested in it, I just don't have the knowledge. I'm finding these to be very peaceful spaces. Although it's not good for the birds being out the rain, there's something about sitting in one in the rain that is like ASMR or something.
Oh, definitely. Sitting in a bird hide in the rain is just like, it's one of the most relaxing things you can do.
It adds a huge element of tranquility, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm hoping with this podcast, maybe like it can reach some people who wouldn't normally think of like going to a bird hide and checking out nature in this kind of way. Can't quite stress enough how nice it is.
Yeah.
And I feel like bird watchers get lumped in with this like train spotting kind of culture and like a bit of a nerd culture, you know what I mean? I felt really bad. Like one of the podcasts I recorded earlier was I referred to someone as a bird nerd. I listened back to it and I was like, I can't say that because like that's what I'm trying to do is like not show, you know, I want to show people that this shouldn't be kind of tarred with the same brush.
But it relates back to what saying, you know, we're both admitting to having quite like obsessive personalities.
Yeah.
I've no doubt I would be called a nerd when it comes to music or anything like that. Like we could sit and have a completely alienating conversation about fucking effects pedals. Someone would be like, either nerding out. It's just what your interest is, isn't it? And people, you know, I know people who get the same way about beers as people do with like tickers, you know, listers and stuff like that. Like,
Oh yeah.
Go in and sit in craft ale bars and tick things off. It's just a form of interest, isn't it?
definitely. While you were talking there,
I've found a little grebe. So if you look at the tree that's in front of her,
yeah,
see there's those geese.
Uh-huh.
There's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 geese underneath the tree. Just underneath, so like closer to us than those geese.
Yeah.
It's dove underwater right now. There it is, it's just popped up.
Oh, I can see it. It keeps dipping in and out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I've also just got complete like face blindness with some birds.
Yeah,
me
too.
I see them so much and I'll be like, what is it? Is it a chaffinch or something? There's something I just can never get. I ask so many times and it's like, seriously, you don't get it yet? I don't know what it is.
I'm the same. There's like, with a lot of ducks, I kind of get that with a lot of ducks. Like, you know, I can never tell, like, is that a pochard or is it just like a mallard or something, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm pretty poor with ducks because there's just so many of them and you kind of, you almost take them for granted and you don't give them enough attention. Oh, look, this little grebe, I think, is coming down here. Is that the little grebe or is that just a duck? No, it is. It's a little grebe. It's really close.
Swimming up to a...
They're cute, aren't they?
They're really cute, cute little things. Are they uncommon grebes or just less?
Yeah, I think they're just less common. Like, for me, I've only really seen, like, a few of them in a pond at a time. There's not, like, a ton of them hanging out there. There's usually only, like, one kind of group.
Are they usually that small? Or is that a small one?
They're called little grebes, those ones. But then you've also got, like, different types of grebe. Like, another quite common one to see in the UK is a red-crested grebe. You must have seen one of them before, yeah?
I think I have. Again, it will have been pointed out to me. I wouldn't go, it's a, you know.
Well, luckily we have the Collins British Bird Guide here.
Oh.
So I'll have a look for the reeb here. So
I guess everyone just heard a plane there as well. This isn't the landing, yeah, the landing route for Newcastle Airport.
No, that was just a massive seagull.
I'm going to Greggs.
I'm going to Greggs. You've got different types of grebe. Great crested are probably the next most common to little grebes. Then you've got an awesome grebe called the Slavonian grebe.
Slavonian.
I was lucky enough to see one of them. It was in a pond up, like right next to where I live, near Lynemouth.
Right.
We kind of like got a little bird alert on Twitter to say that it was in town. So
right, okay.
We went and checked that out. It was really cool.
Another twitch I went on, it's just popped in my head there. It was up on that green Jethro Tull played in South Shields. Is there a bird called a desert warbler?
Christ, sounds like it is. Don't know, personally.
I'm just trying to think of other twitches. I think that
a
was
desert warbler.
Definitely sounds like something I may have just entirely made it up. Saw something up there.
I'll check it out, see if it's here.
Look it up in the guide.
There's nothing in here, or maybe it's under warbler.
Have I just made that fucking thing up?
No, it's warbler. Dartford warbler, a dusky warbler. There's nothing. Was it a migrating bird?
If it was migrating,
it might not be in this book because this is British birds. So
I love the sound of dusky warbler.
I'm just gonna show you this photo of a great crested grebe because you've probably seen one of them before.
I think I have, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, pretty cool. They're like, they've got like a mad mating ritual. They do a dance on the water, they splash all the water around, and they kind of like
dance.
You know when birds kind of like take off but from the water, but they make like loads of noise and kind of like splash loads. That's kind of what they do, but they don't take off. They just kind of like have a little cool dance and their mating plumage comes out and their mating plumage is mad. Oh yeah, so it's got its winter plumage. So that's the inset picture there is the winter plumage. So that's what it looks like in summer. One thing that fascinates me about the black-headed gull is, now I can't remember if it's winter or if it's summer, which way around it is, but in summer, I think it goes away, doesn't it? The black cap goes away?
I think so, because I saw one the other day, like maybe the mating plumage or something. But yeah, they've just got a white head with like the line.
Well, you've got a couple right in front of her here. So if you get your binoculars on...
Is that what's on the post?
Yeah, on this post in front of her is a black-headed gull. And you can see how it's got a black dot behind its eye. So that black dot behind its eye in its opposite plumage kind of covers its whole head. So it's got a black head. I'm going to have to check the facts on that one, whether it's summer or winter, but...
Pretty cool as people, if that happened, our hair just changed colour with the seasons.
Do want to talk about birds quite a lot, but I also want to talk about you and, like, your music and your art and what you do and stuff and kind of, like, how it all started. So I was thinking maybe, like, it would be a good way to get to know you a little bit about, like, how did you start out with music and stuff like that? And, like right. really deep dive, go as far back as you can. And,
yeah.
Like, how did you start playing? Which instrument did you start playing? Who inspired you and all that kind of stuff? So
I guess the earliest form of it was my cousin Ross being bought a guitar one of those sort of metal, you know, it's not metal unless you could have someone's eye out with the headstock kind of.
Oh, a spiky guitar.
It was spiky. Yeah. I think it was an Aria with one of those like kind of green to black burst paint drums.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And a little Watson amp. He'd been bought that for Christmas. It sat against the sort of bedroom wall for years. And then it was re-gifted to me a couple of Christmases after or something. Mm-hmm. Not that I'd ever expressed any interest in owning the guitar. It was just like, we'll see, sort of thing. And I just used to press the fucking overdrive button on the amp, put the CD on, and just like strum it open string.
Okay,
so just making
a
noise. And I never really, I guess, dipped out. Just gone, like what we were saying before about, I dipped between obsessions as a kid. Played hockey, skateboard, and whatever. Like, I could only do one thing at the time. This is a recent thing, trying to balance interests rather than being completely obsessive and jumping two-footed into everything. Yeah, I guess I just went on to something else. And then when I was maybe 13 or something, probably quite a common route into music, other mates get into it and you're like, oh, well, I best do it otherwise. Like, you know, we're not going to be on the same page. So two mates got guitars and they were like, you know, obviously straight away you go like, let's do a fucking band, man. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll have to be the bass player because already two guitarists.
Yeah, yeah.
Not going to be Iron Maiden or like, you know. And I started playing the bass quickly.
Did you slap?
I love slap bass. It's not a rude thing. It's nothing bad. No. It's nothing taboo. I love slapping the bass.
Yeah, I got really into slapping the bass.
Massive slapping and popping.
And popping, yeah.
I love it, you know.
And tapping.
Tapping, yeah. It's not a dirty word, slap bass.
No.
All the best bassists do it, and the best bassists do it effortlessly. Bernard Edwards, people like that.
Yeah.
Saw Chic at the City Hall recently. Guy was playing with them. Fucking unbelievable. I was sure he was playing a five-string bass from the depth that was coming from it, but it's just like when a bass is in the right hands, that can has so much dynamic and control and stuff, like a fucking sound man's dream, because the level of control and the onstage sound was just perfect. It was the best I've ever heard the City Hall. She could fucking unbelievable anyway. So anyway, I bought the bass, played that, and then I started getting some lessons from a guy called Pete Scott, who's like a local I guess like folky kind of artist, but he does guitar lessons out of his attic, or used to anyway, years ago. Concernedly, that is like 20 years ago now. And went to see him, and he was this fucking great guy. Like, really just interested in watching his students grow, and like, it wasn't anything boring, like, just needlessly theoretical. It was like, what music do you like? Let me teach you based around exactly what you want to do and what you want to be playing. So he really like harnessed my interest well.
So what were your interests at that age? Like, what kind of music were you into?
I mean, I've always been a massive wide web of stuff. I get at that time, Faith No More.
Nice.
Guns N' Roses.
Excellent. Yeah.
I've always loved punk. Like, my home listening came from a hybrid of my mom and my dad's music taste, which was, I guess they met in the middle on Bowie and Roxy Music and a lot of stuff that probably everyone's parents who had any taste and grew up in their sort of 70s were listening to. My mum was Northern Soul, Motown, Stax kind of thing. My dad was punk. So I got the Clash, the Damned, all that stuff on that side.
Nice.
And then all the good soul stuff on my mum's side. But so I always loved that. You know, I loved my parents' music. But then my own interests. The first album I bought was on CD from Preston Grange Morrison's. And it was Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
So like, you know, obviously, when you fucking first pick up a bass, you're trying to play fucking boom, doom,
bidi-doom, bidi-doom, doom. Yeah.
Like, yeah, Faith No More, another one. Plenty of fucking dunk, slapping.
Yeah, yeah, like slapping.
I mean, I have huge admiration for proper bass players who started off bass players and just want to be bass players, but I now feel when I play the bass, I'm an electric guitarist on the bass.
Okay.
You know, I don't have that inherent understanding of space and feel that a fucking truly great bassist does. I feel like I'm playing it like a guitar. So anyway, I got the fella Pete, who was teaching us, came out with my mum one day and she was picking me up and just said, I think you should buy him a guitar.
Okay.
So I don't know what had happened to the green and black pointy bugger by this point. Probably being re-gifted again or something. Got a guitar, and then that was sort of it. Like, that was the obsession then.
Yeah.
Everything else fell by the wayside. 2 hours before school, I'd play. As soon as I'd get in, pick the guitar up. My mum was working up in Eldon Square at the time. I remember like taking like, almost like an entire month not going into school. And I'd go to work with her and just go into Windows and play the Strat.
Ooh,
and just sit and play it constantly. And the staff would be like, fucking, it's back again. And then eventually got that guitar.
It was a Fender Strat.
Like Mexican Fender Strat, and it was just like flame burst, fire glow, whatever you call it.
The black and brown and red.
An orangey thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? Like, I love Strats.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. I've got one, and it's like probably the best guitar I've ever owned.
They're fucking iconic for a reason. I'd love to. I mean, you got to lay down about fucking 10 grand or something, but own like a proper, like, 62 sort of Buddy Holly style one or something, you know. A couple of years ago now, my sense of timing is warped and
I think everyone's awful. Is. It's fine.
We're in Nashville and I went to a very dangerous place called Carter Guitars.
Okay.
Where you
like
walk
loads
in
of vintage guitars, is it, by any
chance? You walk in, you're walking out with something, whether you fucking like it or not.
America's got those kind of shops though, hasn't it?
Oh yeah.
I feel like there's not too many in this country, but...
It's just dangerous, man. It's a great little spot of Nashville as well. It's up the road from Jack White's Third Man Records.
Oh, God.
Which, again, dangerous because he sells pedals now. Awesome pedals.
Jack White's Third Man.
Yeah.
Right.
But this guitar shop's up the road. I've been in twice and I've left with a guitar twice. I got this 70s dark wood strap with a sort of brass scratch plate.
Is that the one that I played in the studio that time?
Yes, yeah, I brought it up
for
that. It's got this sort of the deeper 70s headstock, which I really like.
Yeah, yeah. Almost felt bad for even playing that. Like, no, it's a beautiful guitar. And
I love guitars. I don't have a really smashy guitar, but I'm not like, they're there to be thrashed around. They're there to be played aggressively as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But also with, it's like tough love with them. Like, I wouldn't waste a guitar on smashing it, but I've no problem thrashing them around for sonic value. Or digging
into
them.
It's a mutual respect between you and the guitar, isn't it?
It is. Like, yeah.
If the guitar could be a person, it would be just like, yeah, you can throw me
at me, bro.
Throw me about a little bit.
I'm into some weird shit.
I can't believe I've just sexualized the guitar.
I guess what I was getting at, when people name the guitars and stuff, I'm like, no, fuck that. Guitar doesn't need a name.
Yeah.
But they are there to be respected, but... thrashed around. I know I'm not a technically great guitarist, but I know my style, if I have one, comes from how you attack the strings, digging into it, and from a love of people like Nile Rodgers and Cheek. I know I'm a right-handed player. I would like to think the one thing I do possess is a certain feel, because I know I'm never going to be a fucking virtuoso.
I've always seen you as like a very technical guitarist, and I know what you mean. Like, when I've seen you play live, like, you've always like thrown yourself in. And now that you mentioned the right hand thing, in hindsight, I can totally see what you're on about. You are like digging in, and
in this day and age of YouTube guitarists, there's a very divisive types of player, and I definitely feel like someone of an older generation of players, really with my style. I'm a product of my influence, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watching people like Adrian Belew play with Talking Heads in 1980, the way he, with his Strat slung down to his knees, used to just make it sound like a fucking UFO, make it wail, but then play so rhythmically and funky as well. My playing is a product of my influences, and it's, I know I don't have that technicality, but that's the one thing I do like to think I bring to the table, like some feel.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, there's kids in the fucking bedroom who are 8 years old who piss all over me from a great height.
Well, it's like,
these days.
Funny you say that. Just this morning when I like looked at Instagram, I saw this. We're in the age of the content musician, I feel. Like, I don't know if that's the real term for it or whatever.
I know what you mean.
But it's like 30-second clips on Instagram of people sitting. It looks like they're just sitting in their bedroom and they're like, they've got a loop station going on and they're doing like something noodly, or they've got like a multi-take kind of multiple boxes of them playing guitar and they're all playing different parts and they're doing this thing that just grabs your attention for a few seconds and then that's it, it's gone, and you see they've got like a million likes and followers and all that kind of stuff. We're in that age right now, aren't we?
It seems to be synonymous with this genre called neo-soul, I think, as well. Neo-soul guitar.
Oh, like some major seven chords, some jazzy chords, but then like maybe doing like a noodly solo over the top, which is theoretically amazing and like super technical and stuff. But it's like, I think back in when I would hear like that kind of music in like maybe its actual setting, maybe at a gig or on a CD or something like that, I could appreciate it and think that it was really, really good. But like, I almost feel like these content creators are like exploiting this in a way.
I know what you mean. Like, you know, we were talking about Steely Dan before. I feel like, if I heard some of that playing, and kind of do hear a lot of that playing on Steely Dan records, and I'm like, fuck, fucking hell, yeah, there's a total place for it, and mm-hmm. it makes sense contextually within a song, but take it out, put it on a, you know, precisely filmed video yeah. just for the purpose of, watch me do this.
It's showing off. Consume this. It's just showing off, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ironic that it's called Neo Soul, because it seems to, like, vaporize the soul from it. And that's not fair, because I know it's not fair to just fucking dig into a fucking genre, yeah, and these people fucking probably have an insane passion to get that fucking good in the first place. Yeah. But I don't think it's just jealousy that's making me not like it.
I mean,
I'm
like,
not that good.
I won't lie, there is definitely an element of like envy of like, oh shit, I wish I like got into that genre of music
and
really like,
finger. Why are you not strong enough?
Exactly. Yeah. Just like really kind of, I think I was too focused on playing slap bass at the time.
Yeah.
Should have maybe
slap
been
slap bass delivers
like,
what I want for music though. It's rhythmic, it punches, it utilises the space in there.
I can't help but whenever I hear like a really tasty like slap bass driven part, I can't help but just being like, yeah, I fucking like that. You know, that is really, really good.
And it makes you pull that like face where you've just
the dirt face. Yeah. No, but what I wanted to say was this morning when I was looking at Instagram, and I feel like I've discovered this new, I'm not the one who's discovered it, but I'm starting to see this genre of influencers on Instagram. I saw this kid, he's like 5 years old, right? And it's a minute long video of him, I'll show you after this. He's like producing a track. He's got Pro Tools or Logic out on his computer.
Right.
He starts by like playing a little drum beat, like live. He's got his drum kit out and he lays down like this little beat for a few seconds. Then it's like this clip of him going, yeah, that sounds really good. It needs a little bit of EQ though. And then you see him EQing the drum sound. And then he's like, what does this need now? It needs bass. And then it goes to him playing bass. 5 years old, this kid, bear in mind. Plays this like sick little bass line.
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, it needs a little bit of, I don't know, synth violins, and then he plays like some synth violins, and then at the end of it he's got this little track which lasts about 10 seconds, and I'm like, this is what Instagram, this is what it's gonna breed now.
Yeah.
It's this kind of like, obviously I went on his profile and had a look at some of his other videos, and there was another video where he starts a Zoom call with another kid in some other area of the country. I'm assuming this other kid's got like just as much of a following as him.
Yeah.
And this kid's a drummer, roughly the same age, and he's like, I've produced the drums that you sent me, or something like this. This kid's like, I think it was a Michael Jackson song. It's just this Zoom call between these two kids, and it's edited together and stuff, and produced and whatnot.
Might be the next Quincy Jones. You never know.
I'm sitting, like, after I watched the video, I was like, damn, this kid's gonna be, like, probably a shithole producer when he's older.
I mean, yeah, his fucking ear's gonna be pretty attuned by that age.
I think you have maybe, like, Jacob Collier to thank for those kinds of... Do you know who he is?
Why do I know that name?
He's a very like prolific artist at the minute. He's amazing. He's absolutely astounding. Right. Pitch perfect. Really young and full of energy, full of beans. And he's just like very jazzy. And I think that's kind of how he made his following, was doing a lot of things like that online.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Whereas when we were that age, what were you doing at that age? You know, like I was listening to Blink 182, man.
I was
listening to punk pop. And
I mean, what age? As young as five?
Not when I was five. I think when I was five, I was like playing with Action Men, probably.
I have no idea. I mean, as a youngster, I remember getting my first multi-track and I just filled it up. Was it mini disc one?
Nice.
It was a Zoom one and one track broke on it, so it was a 7-track instead of one fader broke on it, so it was a 7-8 track. And I just jammed it up with just scrambled egg of ideas, you know, just figuring stuff out.
Was it like your own music or were you?
Always writing my own stuff, and I still do. I never stop writing my own stuff. One of the worst offenders for thinking everybody knows what you've done, but you've actually not put anything out. Like, so I just consume it myself, but I kind of feel like I've put it out, but I haven't.
Yeah, like a song that you recorded at home like 2-3 years ago, you're done with it, and it's like, it's on the bottom shelf now. Yeah. But if somebody listened to that now, they'd be like, why isn't this, like, why haven't people heard this? Or
I mean, I did an album last year in lockdown. Just like, I'm determined to just start, write, finish. It's recorded to the best of my abilities, which is very limited. You know, it's not...
I think you're probably being modest there. I bet Bennett's...
I'm not. I don't have a... It's a very basic home setup that I do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've just recorded that, and then it just sort of sat there, and it will just continue to sit there. But in my head, I feel like it's done, and it's out there and stuff like that, but nobody's fucking heard it. And now it's just sort of existing in 2020, and that's that. I've done that with so much of my solo stuff. Like, I've got notebooks written up of various albums. I'm like, that song's that. And I do the track listing and compile them all together. and then they just sit. And just they only exist in my head.
Yeah.
You have that morbid thought and also sort of big-headed thought of like, if I got hit by a bus, like, no one would know where any of this music was, and you think, if, and then you think, you got your own shit.
So you've got your own little Prince vault, have you?
Yeah, it's not quite Paisley Park sand yet, but it's...
That's coming out now, isn't it? This, I saw something fairly recently.
It's 2 weeks of unearthed music. I mean, I might not know the whole story here, but I felt a bit uneasy about all that. A man who quite rightly sort of like fought for artists to receive what they're due and keep his music and video off certain sites and things. Mm-hmm. Basically, upon his death, just have everything unveiled to the public. His house was turned into a museum, wasn't it?
And then I think so, yeah.
All this music being sort of wheeled out. I don't know. It could have been written in his will. That's what he wanted to happen. But I felt a bit like sort of going against his representation while he was alive here. I mean, I'm a Prince fan, so like I will listen to every minute of it. But like, it's a bit like that, you know, when they published Kurt Cobain's diary and the first page says, "Don't read this." And you're like,
is that what it says?
Okay, I'll put that back. Shit. You just feel a bit like,
Okay.
I love Minneapolis. I always have found a really great sensation from that town. I love the Replacements. I love their affiliation with the 7th Street Entry and 1st Avenue place. Like, Greeny, common friend of ours.
Yeah.
When he was touring years before I first got to go to America or tour it, he'd said he'd sat in the main room at First Ave and watched Purple Rain on his phone, like with the stage in the background. I fucking love that about Greeny. Like, nothing goes unappreciated or unexperienced when he's involved, you know? And he'd said, I'm sat on the stage at First Ave watching the Prince film. When you're on the wall outside, you've got all the stars.
The names and stuff, hasn't it?
I love Minneapolis.
Did you play First Ave when you were there?
Yeah. And we've done 7th Street Entry as well with the fucking bollard right in front of it. But I got the same appreciation from either of them because you got the early Replacements footage where they're playing downstairs in the basement and you got like the punks queuing up at the back door. Mm-hmm. Everyone dolled up, queuing up for Prince at the front door. It's like, what a fucking amazing time that must have been to be in that city. I love that place anyway. Like, you end up doing loads of in-studio kind of sessions. Mm-hmm. One of my favourites was in that place, a place called The Current.
Right.
And it's an amazing live room they've got.
Is The Current a radio station, is that right?
I think it is, unless it was just the show called that. I think it is the station.
Yeah.
But that was always stood out as one of my favourite in-studio bits of promo we ever did.
Yeah.
Yeah, look forward to going back. I'm desperate to get back over to America, man. Like,
yeah, just...
Longest... I had never been until quite late on, really, because the first time I went was with the band. It was such a prominent part of our, touring over there.
Yeah.
So, like, to have not been for a couple of years now feels quite weird. I'm getting like weird like pangs to go over.
Right, yeah. So what, you would just go over as like a tourist?
I mentioned going for like this road trip idea, you know, make so many great friends from touring and people who've worked with the band in the past, like a former guitar tech of mine, a guy called Danny Nicoletto who lives in Nashville. You want to go and see him. There's bands, a band called The Warren Flint, amazing guys who toured supporting Catfish a bunch of times.
Yeah, I saw them. Yeah,
they're up in Columbus, Ohio. So I've rooted this road trip in my head where I start in the south and head up and catch up with old friends.
Join the dots of all of the
Detroit to watch a Red Wings game. I love Detroit as well. Always felt a great affinity with that town. And then maybe go up to Toronto, where again a load of people have met through touring. Band called July Talk who live there.
Okay.
Great to hang out with them and watch some more hockey.
Is it one of the guys in July Talk who's a birder?
Danny, the drummer. Yeah.
There you go.
He has a page. Danny's photos are amazing. It's like drummers who like birds or drummers with birds or something like that. Drummers with birds sounds like Tommy Lee's fucking handle, doesn't it?
Yeah.
His photos are incredible.
Yeah, you mentioned it to me and it was the first thing I did. I went and checked out his webpage.
You know, we did a lot of touring with them and my interest in very basic knowledge in birding came about really in the last year since I met her.
Weren't birding when you were on tour with them?
No, and now I feel like I missed a trick. It would be such a great day off. They had a benefit of touring, taking you so many places that, you know, you're never short of things to do. There's certain things that when you tour and you know you're sure of, you're going to find a bowling alley, you're going to find a fucking Irish pub if you want it. You know, there's certain things. I would wake up, first thing I do, look for the closest record shop, guitar shop.
Nice.
You know, you're never short of something to do on a day off if you're in a Burden. Yeah. You're going to fucking go and find somewhere and like...
You can just do a bit of urban bird watching as well. Like, you can walk down the street in like a different country, you'll see a bunch of birds that you don't really see. Like, especially America.
Yeah.
Like, a robin in America is a completely different bird to the robin in the UK.
Yeah.
So, just seeing a robin, like a really common robin there or... You know, like, it's fascinating for you because...
Yeah.
Oh, whereas it's not for an American person, you know, because they're so used to seeing them and...
And yeah. I mean, I regret not, well, not regret, but like,
yeah, yeah.
It's a shame that I didn't get to sort of capitalize on that. And I would imagine Danny's very, very, very knowledgeable and would have been amazing to go and see some of them birds. Thinking about it now, people in bands could have some amazing Pokemon Go accounts, really, couldn't you? The amount you'd get around. That's like bird watching, isn't it? That's like people like listers, isn't it?
Augmented reality bird watching.
Do you list?
What's that?
Like bird listing. I know.
Oh, right.
Like, yeah, list.
I don't do a big year or anything like that. No, I don't do that. I just, it's very, very casual. It's a mild hobby for me, so.
Right, yeah.
I'm not super obsessed, although I've probably got quite a big list, to be honest, but
I've
not me.
Jumped in very late, have very little knowledge, but have acquired, if I were ticking, you know, the mockingbird and stuff.
Well,
like,
yeah, if it sounded like you were doing, actively going to see rare birds is something that you and... I know I've been doing, isn't it?
Yeah, so. That time on Holy Island totally about sticks out the most. The shrike, they're fucking, you know, fascinating birds anyway. But that was the first introduction to like a Twitch and watching hordes of people in camo move around the island.
Yeah.
Like starlights being spotted on the other side, so they're pegging it down little pathways and stuff. And I was like, oh, all right, this is serious here. People out telescopic lens in each
big
other.
Big lens, yeah.
But practically like nudging the bird with the lens and you're thinking like, wow, some kit going on here.
How are you aware of all of that kind of stuff? Are you like hooked up to some alerts and stuff like that?
I think there's WhatsApp groups. Like I wouldn't be in that circle myself, but through Anna, you know, she's tapped into all that, you know, it's her livelihood. You know, she's just trained as a conservationist and it's what she does. So like she's tapped into all that sort of thing. For me, I like going up the Holy Island. It's one of my favourite places in the northeast. So I would jump in the car and go there any day of the week. So, but it was just interesting from it not being my own. I feel like I can view it outsidedly and it's interesting seeing that.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, like again, going back to the embracing being back in the northeast sort of thing. Like I love Holy Island or Lindisfarne, I guess if anyone's listening.
It's got a magical vibe, hasn't it? It's got an energy, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's just something really calming about being there.
It's so calming. I saw a barn owl there one morning on an early walk.
Yeah.
And so I stayed over on the island one night, which is awesome. I mean, it's lovely enough anyway going up, but obviously when the causeway is covered and you can't, you get off when you can.
Yeah, yeah.
But I stayed over one night and there's such a lovely tranquility about like, say it's like 4 o'clock or something when the causeway is blocked off and everyone's in, even all the cafes shut.
Yeah.
And everyone else, you know, they don't go out exploring it because they live there.
Yeah.
So it's just felt like it sort of had the place to myself and was just walking around. Then the next morning, utilised the fact that the causeway hadn't opened again.
Mm-hmm.
So pre-tourists coming on and walked up there and yeah, like unsettled an owl that flew off in the morning and it was, the sun was rising and it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
And you're looking down the coast back down at Bamburgh Castle.
Yeah.
I mean, last time I was up there, I've been doing a bit of camping and stuff. Woke up in Bamburgh, sort of stepped out, and there was just a pod of dolphins leaping out of the water directly in front of us. And I was like, wow, this is a truly amazing bit of coastline.
Do you find that that's what kind of comes alongside with birdwatching? Is you, I mean, we're at the coast, obviously, so not everybody has that privilege. For us who are near the coast, I feel like when you get into birdwatching, you also start looking out to sea as well because you've got a pair of binoculars now.
Yeah.
There's like a transition of like we're in a pond right now, we might birdwatch at a pond and then the woodlands and some fields and then you just naturally kind of get towards the coast and you're looking at the birds out in the coast and then that's when you see stuff like dolphins. So I feel like I learned to appreciate the coast as well as birdwatching.
I mean, I think it even, that same mentality even transcends into plants and things as well. There's an appreciation
I feel like
of
that's
nature
another
that
level,
comes,
isn't it? Yeah.
That comes with it. You know, my knowledge of it all is basic, but I do find myself just taking time to appreciate the surroundings a lot more. There's a nice fleeting thing to bird watching as well. I think if I was heavily into it, I still wouldn't be bothered about taking photos because I appreciate that you were there at the same time as this bird happy, whether it's been blown off course and it's meant to be in America. You are there in that moment seeing this bird that is maybe only going to be here once. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, an appreciation of just a certain moment to be found in it as well, which it moves into other things. Yeah, appreciating seeing things out at sea. So like going up that stretch of the coast, I still want to go and do the Farne Islands, the boat tour, go and see the puffins and things like that.
I've done that once.
I did?
Yeah, it's really good. But ever since I did that, I maybe did it when I first got into birdwatching, so like 4 or 5 years ago, when I was like super into it and like a bit obsessive about it. I was like, right, okay, I've got to go on this puffin cruise. So I went and did that.
Right.
I haven't done it since. I miss it every year. I always remember that I need to do it every year. A week after all of the terns have gone and puffins and stuff have migrated.
Have you ever heard of sky fishing?
No.
It's crazy. I only learned of it the other day. I was watching some clips on YouTube. Gordon Ramsay. Basically, they lie on the back on these cliff edges, like really dicey edges with a really long net, like you'd fish something out of a pool.
Yeah, I'd not heard of sky fishing as a term, but I know exactly what you're talking about now, yeah.
And this guy, it's off some, I think it's an Icelandic area, lying on his back on this cliff edge, sits up and snag puffins out the air.
Yeah, yeah.
And this fucking dude like proceeds to instantly kill it, tear it apart, take out the meat he wants, and then just scrams the heart. Like just raw, and Gordon Ramsay sat there like, you know, like, oh wow.
Okay.
And then he goes like, no, try one. And it just, Gordon Ramsay eats it, and you know, usually in programs, you're like, oh wow, what a delicacy. He basically eats it and goes like, fucking hell. And it's like, that is something you can do. You can eat it. Don't know why he would choose it. It was mad. I thought puffins were a lot bigger.
Quite small, aren't they?
Just dinky things. I need to get out on that farm boat trip.
I think it was maybe an Attenborough documentary where I first saw that. Maybe it wasn't Attenborough, but it's some kind of like really nice, luscious BBC documentary. And it was following this group of people who were like Scandinavian, like way far north. They were doing that sky fishing, but they netted like hundreds of birds. And it wasn't puffin, it was something else. It's like a delicacy. Quail, maybe? They would net like tons of them and then build like a... They'd ferment them. They'd build like a stone mound around these birds.
All right.
I think they'd defeather them, get rid of all the feathers, and then put them, like stack them really tightly together, and then put loads of rocks on top of it and leave them there for like the whole summer or something daft like that. So then in winter, when it came to eating them, they'd uncover them. The smell apparently is like disgusting. But the fermented bird is like apparently like delicious. But you know what?
It's kind when of it's fermented, is it like inebriating at that point?
I've absolutely...
You get pissed on quail.
That'd be quite funny if it was.
Our fucking quail's kicking in.
Oh, I can't feel anything. I need another quail.
I like that idea.
Double drop in a puffin. But yeah.
Are you a cook?
I'm absolutely not a cook. I don't have a very nice kitchen.
Makes a big difference when you've got a nice setup.
Yeah,
for it.
I need a better setup at home. So if I did have a better one, then yeah. I can cook. I can cook a fairly decent meal, but I'm not I'm not amazing. I'm assuming you are.
No, no. I mean, just when you're talking about the fermenting process and stuff like that, it was make me think of... I was watching some things where people like cook using the Earth's thermal and stuff like that. Like, I'd love to try some outdoor.
I've tried some of the rye bread in Iceland where they cook it in the earth using like the geothermal stuff. I went to Iceland for a month a while ago.
I was
living on a farm for a month with... It was like an artist residency.
Right.
A bunch of artists from all over the world, so...
It's like a workaway kind of thing, though.
It was just an art residency. I went and did like a little project with my girlfriend at the time, and there was this Danish woman who was staying there as well, and she really wanted to cook some of this bread, so... Got one of the ladies who ran the residency to show us how to do it. So early in the morning, you would kind of make the dough up and then you go down to... We were staying on like a lake in like the countryside. It was lush. So yeah, just like put the pot under the sand or whatever, like black sand of the lake. Yeah, like later on in the day, just going and picking it up, and it was absolutely delicious. It was my breakfast every morning, basically this rye bread with like eggs on top of it and stuff.
That sounds incredible. I'd so, so want to go. There's, you know, see a fair bit of the world touring, but it's kind of always the same routes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's certain markets.
Cities mainly, isn't it? Yeah.
Probably top of my list of places to visit I've not been. So, so want to go.
Did you never play Iceland Airwaves? That's a quite a big, well-known festival.
I've heard of it, but never made it out. It made us feel sick that I couldn't go out. I've flown into Reykjavik once and then had to
leave straight away.
I was like gawping out the window like, oh my God, like, I'm a bit in awe of the place and I've not even been.
Yeah.
I mean, the bird watching there must have been pretty special.
Again, it was a while ago. I wasn't into bird watching at the time, so I wish I had a little bit of knowledge, you know, but... Oh, lush place, like really, really nice place. Definitely recommend it. It's a little bit expensive, but it's worth it, you know.
I also want to go, I guess, of that same area of the world, Newfoundland, over in Canada.
All right, okay.
That looks like somewhere special to visit. I know a few people who've been and they have some sort of like indoctrinating tradition where you can become an honorary Newfoundlander by neck a shot, kiss a fish, and then eat a bite of steak or something.
Right.
And I was watching this thing, I was like, anywhere that does that is fucking okay in my book. Like,
what the hell? That's mad.
But it strikes me as somewhere...
Did you do it when you were there?
No, that's on my list. Iceland, Newfoundland.
Is that written down as Newfoundland?
Newfoundland. I'm trying to say it right, because apparently it's quite like a pedantic thing about...
Okay, Newfoundlanders.
Newfoundlanders. I don't know. I'm probably saying it wrong. There is a way to say it, and it looks fuck all like the way it's written. Again, I actually spoke with some of the guys from July Talk about it. They were saying definitely somewhere worth visiting.
Yeah. Speaking of like the delicacies and stuff, in Iceland they've got fermented shark. I can't remember if it's fermented shark fin or just fermented shark meat.
Right.
But it comes in like you can just get it from the supermarket. And sheep's heads as well. It's just like mad. Like, I know this guy from Iceland now because of all of this, and we went out for a few drinks with him one night. Mm-hmm. So you know when you do the kind of walk from the house to the town to go and like go to a few pubs,
right.
You usually do a couple of like roadie beers or whatever, or like a couple of pre-drinks.
Uh-huh.
We were passing like a convenience store kind of corner shop.
Uh-huh.
We were dipped in to get a couple of road beers, and he just came out with a sheep's head, and it was just, almost just like a little kind of. Like a loaf of peck or something like that. He was just eating it like it was nothing, just like chowing down on it. I couldn't understand what was going on. And we were just like...
It's a mad concept, isn't it, that some stuff's... We all just are fine eating because we've been told it's fine to eat. And like,
yeah.
It's strange that there's a line of stuff like that. Like, why should sheep's head be madder than eating fucking liver?
Yeah, you know exactly. I mean? Yeah, liver is a funny one, isn't it? But like, apparently... Way to go in the future is insects. I've been seeing that popping up every once in a while now.
Is that obviously like there's nutritionally?
In the eastern part of the globe, like, have you ever been to like Southeast Asia area?
Nah.
I was lucky enough to go once and kind of like street vendors selling scorpion and tarantula on the side of the street and crickets and stuff. You could just go and get a handful of crickets. I never tried it, but.
Right.
When I was there, obviously I was thinking, that's disgusting, what the fuck are you doing? Thinking that it was just a gimmick, but I've been seeing like a few reports online and stuff saying like the way that the world's going with climate change and all that kind of stuff, like insects probably the most sustainable way to survive.
So is it worth opening a fucking artisanal insectary on Chin Road or something?
Just get ahead of the curve now, you know, just get in on. You go to Jolly's pet store and just getting all the crickets, like
fucking come and have a glass of Prosecco and a dung beetle.
Exactly, yeah. Back to Iceland, there's a drink in Iceland called Brennivín, which is like a highly concentrated, it's basically like vodka but like super strength.
Kicks your tits
and
off.
It's called the Black Death. Because it's just like a black label, and we did the Iceland Airways Festival. Not played it, we just went as punters.
Right, yeah.
It was just like, it was the pre-drink of the holiday, like, just gets you absolutely smashed.
Yeah.
But it gets you on a particular level, it's just like, just gets you on a high, because you're like, it's, you know, it's like tequila almost. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Who was playing when you went over?
Oh my God, Bjork was meant to be headlining, but she pulled out a couple of months beforehand, so we missed out on that.
I saw Bjork. Once
I've not seen Bjork.
Not ashamed to say I fucking wept like a baby.
Like,
it was a bit much to, you know, a bit much to take. I just saw The Cure play Disintegration. Fucking, it was a Sunday on a festival, so you know, certain chemicals were having the effect that they have on a Sunday at a festival.
Right.
And Bjork came out. She had a 22-piece Icelandic choir, guy playing a hang drum. And a guy playing synth and stuff like that. David Attenborough did the epilogue-y kind of thing. It was that biophilia tour. Mm-hmm. And it was overwhelming. Yeah. Overwhelmingly beautiful. I've never known anyone demand, not with saying anything, just demand so much respect just by walking on stage.
Yeah.
And everybody fell fucking pin drop silent and were just blown away. It was outstanding. Like,
yeah.
Really outstanding gig. She had a Tesla coil on stage.
What?
That was linked up. And each time this certain keyboard was played, a bolt of electricity seemed to go across. And it was so quiet in between songs that you could hear like the hum of it in between. It was amazing.
What?
Yeah, that coupled with seeing the Cure was just, my emotions didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
It's like, fucking hell, man.
That's music for you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I imagine to see her in the
Iceland.
Setting of Iceland,
yeah,
as well. That might have been too much.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was pretty devastated when she had to cancel. I can't remember the reason why she had to cancel, but yeah, I can't remember who else played. I mean, it's a bit blurry before that Black Death flowing through my veins.
Oh.
But saw William Tyler, do you know who he is?
No, no.
I think you probably really appreciate him. It's like a solo guitarist, kind of a folk background, and a lot of like finger picking, and a lot of it's like instrumental as well, but it's like beautiful, like 8-9 minute long songs. You just get lost in them. I saw him in this like really cool church setting that was beautiful.
I like when people know a song can just be an instrumental.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Not every
yeah.
song needs to be the same format. It's nice to use a certain piece of music for a certain
definitely,
purpose.
Yeah. Beach House played, they were amazing. Father John Misty, he's something else. Are you a fan or not?
I am, yeah. I've seen him a few times.
Have you met him? I feel like you've met him. You've got a Father John Misty story.
Briefly at the Brit Awards, I think he was nominated for something, and mm-hmm. he turned up just so when the camera went on him, it seemed like he could be looking at his phone instead or something.
I remember that. I was watching that. Because I knew yous were nominated,
yeah.
Which you won, of course.
We did, huh? They seem to be outside in the smoking area most of the time, so I kept sort of seeing him. Never been one for, like,
gushing over celebrities.
Not even that. Like, I just, you know, everyone's just there to do their own thing. Do you know what I mean? I'm yeah. shit at networking. I really have yeah. admiration when people are good at it, and they're like, it's a great attribute to be able to have. I'm quite insular.
Yeah. I think I'm the same. I kind of want to be able to just be like, okay, let's be friends, let's talk. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know, a lot of social anxiety and those kinds of stuff. If it was just like, you know how me and you are having a nice conversation, like it's totally fine in that setting.
Yeah.
But when there's like, usually in those networking situations, it's got to be at like an event or a
yeah.
bar or a pub or whatever. Or
I'm easily grossed out as well if something feels inauthentic.
Absolutely, so
like,
yeah.
Like, if something's being like set up in a networking way, I'm like, ugh. I know it's like kind of my own fault, or not fault, just the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally appreciate when people are good at it and it's very fucking effective in
yeah.
the music industry or film industry or whatever. Like, I get it. I'm just not good at it myself.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that one.
Old Father John was there. Yeah, that was just a peculiar night. We fucked off straight away, not realising it was a dummy award. Like, they inscribe them all like once they've been
right.
won. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we just fucking walked straight out the front with it in a Sainsbury's bag. Went and got a big slab of cans. And we were like, had it in a Sainsbury's bag, and like poking its head out in Sainsbury's and stuff like that. And then just went and sat and got pissed. I think we even put the rest of it on the telly. And then like the management phoned and they were like, all right, very funny. Like, where are you coming back to get the other awards? And we're like, no, we're fucking other side of London. We did actually get the proper ones.
Did you get one each?
I think we ended up with five because one was a dummy then. So we did get one.
Oh, yeah. So where's your Brit Award sitting right now then?
I just give it to your mum. My mum's got all that.
Give it to your mum.
All that stuff. I'm actually, it's very nice accolades, things like that, and like the discs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean anything. I don't really take pride in that. I'm thinking of doing some like raffly kind of things. Like, I've got a load of memorabilia, which mm-hmm. would be more appreciated by other people.
Yeah.
So I was doing the Great North Run earlier in the year and raffled off like some bits for that, and then some people who were like runners up, I just sent them some other stuff I have lying around the house. And with
yeah.
the discs, there's people who such insanely passionate followers of what we've done. I feel like that sort of stuff would be better with them. So like,
of course,
off the top of my head, I think there's one woman in Japan who's an amazing fan of the band and so passionate about the music for all the right reasons and good to us as people and things.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to send them some of what we have because it'd be more appreciated. Like, it's in my mum's house. Like, sort
yeah,
of,
yeah.
like, I'm sure she's happy with it, but like it doesn't mean much really. I think, you know, you and I make music for a certain reason that it's nice, mm-hmm. that stuff, it is a thing, but it doesn't matter. I got quite distorted with that at certain times, thinking I was bothered about the scale of things. Then I realised that was somebody else's goal, not mine. Yeah. I'm not bothered about I'd be as happy playing the Clooney with 200 people who were buzzing to be there as I would. Yeah. Then I would with 10,000 people in the arena. Any mass gathering's amazing and there's a sensation created by it, but like...
Do you feel like before that was happening, that was... that you did want that? And
Do you have to achieve it to know if you want it or not, kind of thing?
Almost kind of like, were you aware that that's what your milestones were, or were you just kind of like...
I think I thought they were my milestones for a while, because mm-hmm. maybe the goal of the band, something like that, but it wasn't. Yeah. And I'm saying that's where it got distorted, and you reassess, you get a bit of perspective from a distance and go like, hold on, it's amazing, and be appreciative of it. It's not all the boxes ticked.
Yeah,
it's not your vision kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not vision, it's not your necessity, I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
I guess I'm glad I've done it.
Without a doubt, I mean, you've like toured the world and stuff, haven't you? So,
And I can very much want to continue. One of my goals is go back and play my own music in Japan. Fucking love Japan.
I've never been.
We went with Detroit Social Club, and it's still the most magical trip I've had there. And we all really, really appreciated it. Everyone, you know, again, going back to Greeny, like, he lives every moment with the eyes appropriately wide. You know, like, going there with him, we both picked out the albums we wanted to listen to on the flight there, on the journey from the airport to the hotel, like...
Do you remember what they are?
I know he had the Blade Runner soundtrack on, which, I mean...
Nice. You know, that's good.
I actually bought a record the other day of an orchestral version of that, the Vangelis soundtrack.
Nice.
That's fucking cracking. I had Heaven or Las Vegas, the Cocteau Twins record on, which I find now that album, it's the perfect version of when an album becomes a moment in time for you. Like it's a time capsule.
No, is it Japan now, is it?
That and Avalon by Roxy Music, which is one of my favourite albums anyway. Mm-hmm. And the sort of eponymous track is one of my favourite songs. I just picture that time and being in Japan. It's a very fucking happy place. And it means a lot to me being in that place and being as a tourist, but being there to play music is a very, very happy experience to me. Yeah. And that's one of the peak things I want to get back to do and play some of my own music there, my own songs and things, and get back out and fully embrace it. I've enjoyed playing in bands in the past, and you get that fucking gang mentality sort of shit and da-da-da-da-da. And then it wears thin. It's like, you know, people change and that's lost. And then trying to force it and go like, we're still a fucking gang to the outside world just seems lame and childish.
Yeah.
I just don't want to do anything that's not authentic these days. So if it's a project that lasts a year and it feels great for that year, then it doesn't anymore. That's all it needed to be. So I'd love to do some gigs with Symphonic Pictures just to play them songs for a couple of nights somewhere, maybe.
Yeah.
I know everybody else who is in the band is doing, you know, have kids or do whatever, so they wouldn't want to tour it, but it doesn't mean we couldn't just enjoy it for what it is. But I know I have my project I'm moving into doing. I want to take as seriously as it gets. I would like it to, you know, I still want to tour. I love touring. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fucking amazing thing that I've been very fortunate to do and appreciative of. I don't want that to stop. Fucking, it's on me to do some work now.
Well, I think what you just described there, that whole kind of wanting to do kind of projects dotted around, I feel like that's a true sign of someone who wants to do it in, like, art, you know? Like, that's a true sign of an artist, someone who... You're not going to pigeonhole yourself into just doing one thing for the rest of your life, you know?
Well, it seems pointless doing something if it's not enjoyed.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I don't want to go through the motions with anything. I know there is an element of being in the band which has to be sluggish if you want to do it properly, and I've never really found it to be a slog. Even the longest tours are enjoyable. Like, I don't really get beaten down by it. But, you know, why do something if it's not fun?
Exactly, yeah. That's
really, it. And... Yeah, that's sort of the mentality going with this. Make other people enjoy it because I'll be enjoying it, hopefully.
Exactly.
I'm saying this.
I'm personally of a similar nature to that. Like, I don't want to I'm happy just kind of doing project, and then if it's not enjoyable anymore, like, I don't want to do it anymore. It's similar with you with, like, Symphonic Pictures. Like, there's a couple of things that I've done which I feel slightly unfulfilled about.
Right, yeah.
Like, so one day I would like to kind of just scratch those itches, you know. One of them was when I went to Iceland and did that residency, I recorded like a piece of music.
I mean, it's got to be a pretty fucking inspiring place. Like,
oh yeah, definitely, definitely. But I never ever got to play that live, just because like the instrumentation and stuff was a little bit different to what I'd, you know, there was like some strings on it and stuff, so I'd like to get some strings players. Like, I would be able to put like a, you know, drums, bass, guitarists and stuff like that together in a room, but it wouldn't be real. So like,
yeah, I mean, if you ever need a subpar pedal stomping guitarist to come in and do it, I would lend myself to that.
Well, like naturally, with it being in Iceland, it was very post rock kind of like shoegazy. So
yeah,
it's absolutely a place for that.
But that's yeah, my bag.
So yeah, well, maybe one day I'll do it. For me, it was like it needed to be a particular venue as well. It needs to be a good room to do it in.
Yeah, yeah.
So I couldn't just do it at like the Head of Steam or the Clooney or something like that.
It's got the Sage written.
It's
all
gotta
over
be
that.
The Sage, yeah. So
I was at the Sage for the first time in a long time the other day.
Right.
To watch Squirty Pilly. Which was like a dream come true, watching them nice. Play Cupid and Psyche, the album.
Gone past my head, Squirty Pilly.
Late 70s sort of post-punky band turned 80s fucking insanely well put together pop group. Like they did two records in the middle of the 80s that are just like unbelievably well arranged fucking pop masterpieces. Green Guardside, the writer, is, I love his lyrics. He's got this beautiful melodic whispery kind of voice that's like unlike anyone else's. And but they made this album that was so fucking well put together and precise that it was hard to do live, so they didn't play live.
Oh, okay.
And they were touring this year playing it in its entirety. So I was like fucking, my face was hurting the day after from grinning watching. I went on my own. Going to gigs on your own is a, you know, I think when you probably watch a gig similar to me where you're very objective, you know, like looking around the stage and like fucking analytical as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, I quite enjoyed going on my own to take it in, and yeah, it felt quite like personal, and I was just grinning like a fucking Egypt all the way through. It was mint, but I was like, fucking hell, the Sage, man. I forget it.
Was it Hall 1, was it?
It was Hall 2. It's such an interesting space, and like, I do forget it's there sometimes, considering it's amazing, fucking almost impossible too, seeing as it's like...
Have you never played it?
No, I have played it with Detroit Social Club in about 2009, which was a landmark gig in my musical career.
Yeah, I've never played it.
My uncle made it. So my uncle, who was like paraplegic, it was the only time he could come and see us, because he was very like, he's like, no, I don't want anyone making a fucking fuss about it. It's like, so he wouldn't like be helped into other venues and stuff.
Right.
But because that's a new space.
And it's got all of the
accessibility. Very accessible. And stuff, yeah. He came to watch it and he got me in. First person to play me Led Zeppelin 4.
Okay, nice.
He had like Jefferson Airplane. He gave me Surrealistic Pillow. Like, he loved his music. He was always like bedridden. But he'd just be like, shout over, get that CD out, and like sit and drink fucking Ace Lager, if you remember that.
Lager,
like Creedence or something like that. Gave us my first Kink CD, which started my love of all things older. He made that gig, so that I have eternal love for this age for. It allowed him to see us live.
Yeah.
So yeah, played it then. And then we used to use it for pre-production for Catfish, so
we'd
use the stage just to test live shows. We did a video in Hall 2 that never got used. Fucking no idea what ended up happening with the footage, but I refilmed the video. I don't think the song even came out as a single. It was on a record.
Right.
But yeah, it caters to a certain type of music generally, doesn't it? So like a few times a year, there's a band I'll go and see there, but I wouldn't be there all the time.
Yeah, the experience of going to the Sage is always just, it's of its own kind of, it's in its own category almost. Like you go, the stage times get announced and stuff. The band will be starting in 5 minutes. So you know you've got time to have a beer and you've got time to like chinwag with your mates and stuff. And then you go in, like 9 times out of 10, it's like a really attentive audience. And if you're in Hall 2, sometimes it can be like stacked with people. So it feels like a gritty gig. But then they can also like put the chairs out. And you can sit down and like watch the most mad gig that you would never normally go and see. Like I saw Sam Amadon play there once. Like there's an Icelandic label called Bedroom Community. A bunch of artists on, like Ben Frost, Valgeir Sigurdsson. Sam Amadon was on at the time. And a guy called Nico Mooley, who's like an arranger, writes strings for a lot of artists and stuff. Record label was touring with all of its artists just for one gig. So, you wouldn't see that kind of gig, you know,
well, yeah,
at any other kind of venue other than like the Sage, you know.
I've seen, and it makes some other bands who might play somewhere else do a certain type of show. I saw Spiritualized there on a thing called the Acoustic Mainlines Tour,
right? Yeah,
where he stripped it back to him on a road and occasionally acoustic guitar, three gospel singers and a string section. Also saw in that hall too as well, as part of, you know, when they do like the Americana mm-hmm. festival things, it was one of those sort of songwriter circles kind of thing. So, you know, they're chatting about the songs, and a lot of them they were doing were like old American folklore-y kind of tales that have been turned yeah. into songs or traditional pieces. Kristen Hirsch, who was in a band called The Throne Muses, she was there. She's got an amazing voice. And she was there playing with someone who was playing a fucking saw. It was the first time I'd heard anyone play a saw live. Yeah, like that's, you know, with it like bowing.
It's like a spooky sound, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like a... Like yeah. fucking bowing the edge of the saw. And, you know, not many venues you go and watch someone do a saw solo.
Well, Sage, if they're listening, let's get a gig over.
I mean, it sounds like the place for what you're saying, an Icelandic-inspired kind yeah. of string-laden...
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. Is it instrumental?
It is, yeah. It's like a little bit of sound, like field recording involved as well, so it's like...
I like that, man, like kind of Foley sounds being incorporated.
Yeah, music. It's like...
Have you heard of a band called The Books?
No, I don't think I have.
They do that. They're rhythmically quite clever with their samples, but they might sample just, well, just background noise and things, and yeah. they use it very cleverly amongst the songs. Worth checking out. The Lemon of Pink would be a good...
The Lemon of Pink?
The Lemon of Pink would be a good jumping
sounds
off
sounds like a good title. There's another band, Efterklang. Have you heard of Efterklang?
No.
Danish band who just got the most amazing story for an album. It's like a dream of mine. It was like I was heavily inspired by this album. The album's called Pyramida, or The Ghost of Pyramida. I think the documentary's called Ghost of Pyramida, and the album's called Pyramida, or the other way around, I can never remember. Mm. So yeah, Danish band, and they traveled to this like place in the Arctic Circle, which, I want to get this right here, it was like an ex kind of like mining village that was purposefully built for the people to like come over from Scandinavian countries and live in this like little village town type thing. Uh-huh. They brought their families so they could just like work there. The men would go to work on all of these kind of like industrial zones and stuff. And because it was in the Arctic Circle, it was like just a mad landscape. I think the industry went tits up, so they had to just leave. So when they left, they've just left this entire like village there, and it's just like a derelict village. And it was like very industrial as well. So this band, Efterklang, went over and they had like this guy who was like their guide, but he was also, he had a rifle with him for polar bears and stuff like that. Yeah. So they lived on the island for about a week. Not an island, sorry. I think it's like super, super north kind of like island of like just above Norway somewhere.
Right.
And they just did like loads of Foley like field recording in yeah. this place. Banging like vats of from the factory and like dropping stacks of like books that were in the apartments, the dead apartments. It's almost like Chernobyl, yeah. Mm. Kind of similar vibes to that. But then with all of the samples that they created, they came back home and just made an album.
That's mad, man.
And they obviously, like, when they were out there taking all of the samples and stuff, they made the documentary as well. So yeah. the documentary, like, goes side by side with the album. There's also, like, interviews with the people who lived on the place as well, so...
What, and they incorporate that into the...
Yeah, into like, the documentary. Not in the album, but in the documentary, right. yeah. And then they toured that, and they started at the Sage. And when they started at the Sage, they rented the Northern Sinfonia for the UK leg of their tour. So there were residents at Sage for a few days rehearsing, and then they put a massive gig on at the end of their rehearsals, and then went off and toured, like, the rest of the UK.
Right.
But that gig in Hall 1 was just, like... the best gig I've ever seen at the Sage. It was just absolutely amazing.
You're going to have to send us like a good...
The documentary, go for the documentary is my recommendation, yeah.
Make sure you flag it up with this. My brain's like a sieve.
Oh, no,
like,
I will.
That
I
sounds
will.
Like definitely something I'd like to check out.
You know what? I think we should probably call it because it's 2 hours that we've been talking.
Is it? So oh, fucking hell.
Yeah, but before we go, like maybe... Have you got any like recommendations? Any new bands that you want to like?
Newcastle's brimming with good bands again at the minute. Django yeah. Flasher coming out. They saw a band called No Teeth recently. They're fucking cool. You know what? This is one of them things I'm always like, when people go like, music shit these days, it's like, nah, you're just not looking hard enough. And there is a load of new stuff I listen to and hear. Mm-hmm. But then my brain just fucking
punks out.
Fizzles out when I go. Yeah. Like, it's sad how reliant you become on playlists and.
Yeah, yeah.
Like self-made ones, but like fucking liked songs and stuff to remember what you like these days.
Oh, I'm really
phone. What am I gonna do?
I'm really bad when it comes to like
just titles of songs and titles of bands. Like, I just know that I like that song. I don't know what it's called. I barely know who it's by. I'm pretty bad for being a musician and almost being like an advocate for like, you should listen to music, everybody, because that's my job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really bad at it, you know.
Newcastle's looking good music-wise at the moment. I guess other recommendations, really. Be trying to read more. I've got, I'm terrible. I get a few things on the go at once, though.
Yeah, so same.
I'm reading Will Carruthers of Spaceman 3, the bass player. Reading his book, which I think is called Playing the Bass with Three Left Hands. I'm reading a book called Sapiens, which is just about the history of humanity. That's fucking baffling me with every chapter. I'm like,
is it?
Oh my God. I would fully recommend reading it. It's interesting reading about our species.
Like, yeah.
Just reading some facts and actually going like, wow, this is fucking interesting. That's me giving myself a kick up the arse to read more this year because I'm fucking terrible with it.
Mate,
I used to only read on holiday because it's the only time, again, looping full circle back to what we said at the beginning, I can't fucking settle.
Yeah, yeah.
I've really struggled to settle. So it has to be on holiday where I go like, right, you're doing fuck all else. So just pick up a book.
There's something about like, going to the airport, finding a book in W.H. Smith and going, right, I'm reading you this holiday.
Yeah.
I haven't done that in years, personally. I'm the same, man. I barely read anymore. I've been reading Ham on Rye for maybe about a year and a half. Still haven't finished it. But class, well, thanks very much for doing it. It's always a pleasure. I'm chuffed that your bird watching's like come along, and especially that you got the key to the other bird hide, and it's amazing. Like,
the knowledge is minimal, but the appreciation is there.
Yeah, definitely, man. Nice one. Well,
thanks for having us, man.
Thanks very much, man.
So there it is, episode 1 of Hide and Speak. Thanks very much to Johnny for being the guest. I had an amazing time recording it, so I really hope you've enjoyed listening to it. We'll be back next week for episode 2. Got some great guests lined up for the rest of the podcast, so please keep in touch and we'll update you as soon as possible. If you could do the whole liking, subscribing, give it a little share if you want, that'd be greatly appreciated by me. But yeah, big thanks to Johnny again. A couple of special thanks to give out Lindsay and Daniel for giving us a little bit of extra help with the press and promo and all that kind of stuff. Wolfgang Paradiso for the artwork that she's given me. It's amazing, as you can probably see. Hagee for helping me set up the website, which is hideandspeakpodcast.com. Thanks to Jack for helping with the editing, and also thank you for listening as well. I'll see you in episode 2. Ciao, ciao.